Aaron, I'll make a couple brief remarks because I know a lot of you will want to comment on this. One of the things that Sharon, I don't think, did mention is that while she spent 9 years prosecuting this case, that the tobacco industry would come with a huge request for data. The Department of Justice didn't have the funds that they needed to comply with their request, and then then they would ask for supplemental so that they could comply with their request. The tobacco industry at the same time would talk to their friends on the Hill to deny the funding so that the Department of Justice could comply. My view of this thing is that if the tobacco industry had said, gee, we've been bad guys for a long time, we're turning over a new leaf, and we're not going to do this anymore, may not be having this discussion. But I think what you heard Sharon say is this continues, and one of the arguments is that, well, look, our academic senate has the ability to watch what it is that we do. One of the things, and I must say, I'm on the board of the American Cancer Foundation, Society Foundation, is that they will put out, the tobacco industry will put out whatever report they feel like putting out, and they will list the people, the groups of people that use as advisors, even though it may have nothing to do with advising them on that particular issue. And, you know, you will see UCLA's name listed there. I should also further tell you, because this issue concerns me so greatly, that you should know that UCSF as a group voted in favor of the ban, the academic set members. One of the proposals before us is, which we can talk about, is to allow individual units to decide for themselves whether they are willing or not to take tobacco. Furthermore, I can tell you that two Nobel Prize winners, MDs, who work for the University of California, have told me privately that they would not take tobacco money. I know one other Nobel Prize winner who used to be connected in cancer research with the university, is no longer there, did take tobacco money and regretted it. And you have David Kessler, not to be confused with Judge Kessler, someone who ran the FDA for a long time, who also doesn't think we should be doing business with these people. So anyway, those are my comments. I'm sure others have comments.
Thanks for the information. Let me see if I have. Tell me if this is a correct characterization. A distinguished federal judge said that the tobacco industry engaged in but amounts to criminal enterprises and established front organizations to fund research. I don't know who prepared the sheet here. Have you seen this? Shows the dollars, I guess, that are going to 2006 and 2007 to AUC. It's a fairly significant amount of money, but it's not overwhelming for a budget. But is that pattern repeated itself? Is UC unique, or are these front organizations targeting other schools like Harvard or some of the better medical schools?
Well, I live in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I can tell you that I read in the paper recently that the University of Virginia had just been given a lot of tobacco money. Being a great tobacco-producing state, that's no surprise. I have to correct just a little bit your question when you said criminal activity. The statute itself is a criminal statute, but the difference between criminal and civil is no one's going to serve time in jail. oh, what happened. But it is exactly the same remedies as a criminal case and the same concerns and the same thing that we had to prove in our civil case had it been a criminal case. It's exactly what we proved.
Well, so did the people already go to jail. The question is, do they rely upon publications by these various research universities to help them in their lobbying efforts against, say, any sort of restrictions on smoking, say, indoor smoking, for example, and so-called passive smoking?
Yes, they do. They definitely rely upon those things, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, but in 2006, the Surgeon General's report dealt with secondhand smoke issues. A lot of our case covered, and this is one of the reasons that the judge found that the activities continue to this day, it covered the situation and how the industry uses research with respect to secondhand smoke issues to affect policies and practices surrounding them.
All right, I just did a little quick calculation here. I think that's right. I understand how many people died in 9/11, which was obviously a terrible event. That many people are going to die every day in the 21st century as a result of smoking, and I don't think that's the sort of thing the University of California ought to be. If I could ask our provost a question, I want to blindside you, but you don't have to be a spokesman for the Senate. But is there any organization on the planet, maybe one is terrible as the planet, that the University of California, as a matter of policy, that is at a regional level, ought to take a position? Okay, we're not going to take money from people like these because they're so crummy.
That's an extraordinarily difficult question to answer, of course. I can't represent the view of the academic community on such a question. The academic senate may wish to comment. I would like to comment, I'll begin with something personal, because it means something to me, and it probably there are similar feelings around the room. Both of my parents died at least 20 years earlier than they should have because of tobacco, and I know that I share that with many people. So I have no love for the tobacco industry. But I always have a great love for the community of scholars. I do believe that the community of scholars, as Ms. Eubanks said, should self-regulate. So we should set conduct within a framework set by the community of scholars. And I believe that we have that capacity. So that's also a personal statement. I have a very strong belief that the community of scholars does have the capacity to self-regulate, and I hope that we can just find a solution where the community of scholars is still permitted to do that.
Well, I do too. But how many individuals have the authority to accept grant money from some of these private organizations?
Within
the whole university.
All grant funds are accepted in the name of the region.
Yeah, but how many individuals have under the guise of academic freedom can say, yes, I will accept money from this organization or that? How many people are actually applying for it? Because these things typically don't come over the transom.
Are you asking how many people are seeking funding from tobacco industry?
No, I'm just trying to figure out, when you look at academic freedom, what does that mean? Are we trying to find a common ground among, say, 5,000 people, 500 people, 10,000? How many different people can say, yes, I've decided, I've scrutinized the donor's intention here, and I think I can do good work on it, and if I'm not allowed to do it, violation of the university's academic freedom?
All such decisions are delegated by the regents to the president or the chancellor. So individuals cannot accept money within the University of California. So that the answer is very few. Those of us who you authorize to do that in the name of the president. So individuals can't sign a contract with the donor.
Isn't that what we're arguing for here, is about the ability? That is, we don't want to impinge on access. that we freed it because an individual researcher ought to have the right to take that money for whatever purpose he deems appropriate if they're a faculty member.
That may be straying into areas that are not productive, because the community of scholars, and this is a sort of historic concept that's now 800 years old, regulates the conduct of individuals within the community, and we regulate, I think, quite vigorously. So individuals aren't free to cry fire in a theater, you know. They are regulated by the community, and it's within the rules of the community that they operate, and they're very constraining rules, but it is that community of scholars that sets those rules.
Very persuasive and very cogent argument, but many of us, I'm not on this committee, but I want to, I'm sure, voicing concern about taking a position against a community of scholars by a side with Provost Hume. I feel that they certainly have, over a very long period of time, demonstrated standards of ethics and conduct that would allow them to self-police within this. But I am interested in, if we can get back to this, hearing about a compromise that the chairman is working towards with the faculty, so we can move something, or we'll be here all day.
How would that affect the largest project on this list that we were given, which is the UCLA Adolescent Smoking Cessation Center, the $6 million?
Danny, you asking me? Was that a question directed at me? I think under these circumstances, we would be required to decline.
And that, can you give a brief description of what that center does?
That's a tough question on no notice, Ben. I would be guessing based on the name of the grant. I'm sorry, I haven't researched the methodology that's followed. That it's a smoking cessation study. There are many such studies that are done.
Region Glass Sample.
To the fundamental relationship that the entire university is built on. And I don't think this is really just about that. I mean, I think this is a much, much, much bigger issue. As Laurie so articulated, we have had a joint governance situation between the faculty and the region. That is the basis on which this university has been formed, and it's worked for its entire time. We asked the Academic Senate to come back with how they felt about it, and they did. It took a while, but they did, and they've asked to govern themselves. I really think this boils down to whether or not this university is going to exist with the Academic Senate, which I totally think it should, and whether or not we trust them, which I do. I really believe that they have the ability to self-govern. Let us remember, you do not have to take the money. I mean, everyone has the free choice of whether or not to take it. So to me, the most important issue is the issue that this university was built on, which is joint governance, and the trust that I have for the Academic Senate's ability to self-govern. I also want to say that I've spent the last 20 years of my life as a cancer advocate, so I am not a fan of tobacco. I do know the harm that tobacco does, but I also tell you that I am equally as concerned about the environment, and so I do believe that when we open a Pandora's box, we do open a Pandora's box, and we've heard about the environment just recently in a presentation. We're taking gas money. I get letters every day from people telling us not to take money from big oil, not to take money from certain countries. And most of the time, actually, I'm quite sympathetic with what they're saying. But to me, we must allow the academic senate to self-regulate. And I trust them. So, that's
what I thank you. Regent Cosgrove.
I echo Regent Lansing's sentiment. We gave the academic senate a hard task to send it back to them. They came back to us with the decision. That it was obviously very heavily debated and thought through. I'm happy to entertain an alternative, but an alternative isn't before us today. We have something quite different before us. I also have to say that we do research in a number of heinous areas. And out of those heinous areas have come some important science that has saved lives. And I think of TNT, whose active ingredient, nitroglycerin, saved thousands of lives. Or our nuclear weaponry that went on to save thousands of lives with nuclear research medicine. So I have to say I'm very uncomfortable foreclosing scientific discovery. And I trust the faculty, and we do have a code of ethics. And if we stand behind it, I can't support it.
Thank you, Regent Persky. I'd just like to see if I could place a little framework around this issue. I don't think it's appropriate to kind of couch it as, are you going to give individuals total academic freedom? It seems to me that the funds that come in are being accepted by the regents. But we have in the past decided that rather than have us individually evaluate these proposals, that we would delegate that authority, ultimate authority, to the president and to the academic senate. So it seems to me that if the regents decide they don't like that delegation, that's a decision that can be made. I'm not quite sure that the regents are in a position, if you will, to exercise the kind of oversight on this issue that the faculty committee and the president has the responsibility to do. Given the issue itself, however, I would think that there ought to be a way in which the regents could be regularly notified of the way in which this delegation of authority on our behalf is being exercised, so that we have a report about it, because after all, we've delegated it. They are exercising this authority on our behalf. So I'm not quite sure that what's before us addresses that, but I certainly would be an advocate of moving in that direction while still endorsing the appropriate delegation. Thank you, President Dunn.
Thank you, Regent Gould. Thank you, Regent Parsky, because you said a few of the things that I wanted to say. As I've thought hard about this issue, consulted with the faculty and consulted with administration, I have heard no one in support of the tobacco industry. So let's be clear. I have heard no one argue in support of the tobacco industry. What I have heard over and over again is that research, honest, fundamental research aimed in areas that the university chooses to go, generates knowledge that is used, for the most part, for benefit. I believe that the Surgeon General's report came from research, ultimately. On the other hand, I don't dispute that the tobacco industry has cherry-picked, if you like, and cited research that is to their advantage. As I've gone through this, I'm really finally driven by the belief that that the faculty are the best judges of the quality, the integrity. results. And the faculty can be, and should be, in my view, advising the deans, or reporting to the deans, reporting to the chancellor, and reporting to me, and my reporting to you, the regents, is the right way to oversee the quality of the research, any misuse of research, and any research misconduct. We have in place the processes to actually identify each of those, the misuse, the misconduct, etc. This is a particularly important issue because of the reports that were given to us by Ms. Eubanks through the judicial system, such that I do believe, as we have tried to work through the value of the independence of our faculty, and yet the need to keep the regents in a very, very timely way informed and abreast of what's going on, as Regent Blum and Provost Hume and I and others have been thinking through, I do believe that there's a way to put sunshine on this in such a way that the faculty will still be able to self-govern themselves, and we will be able to shine sunlight on both the quality of the research and the use of the research in timely ways. I don't think we're there at a compromise yet, but I do believe we can get there. I believe that Chair Blum believes we can get there as well, in such a way that we maintain the integrity of the faculty process and still satisfy our moral responsibility.